So we are going to continue our discussion today of picture four, catching the ox. And for those new to the series, Sims is using the 10 pictures, usually told through the Zen tradition, the 10 ox herding stories or pictures to express stages of a spiritual journey. And also the pictures have been described as a map, while the territory they cover is awakening. And so we've seen the pain of emerging onto the path through our search for happiness. And we felt the freedom and ease in finding the tracks, finding the Dharma and the ease that's spoken through the heart when we know the truth. The ox representing pure mind or Buddha nature. And we actually catch a glimpse of it, which gives us faith and know that a mind can be freed. So in picture four, we see a struggle. Not yet, Sue. Well, maybe it'll, yeah, okay, go ahead and put it up and I'll just continue talking. Identified your cue later, but it seems appropriate when I say in picture four, we see a struggle, as many teachers have already pointed out. And when I first saw it, I thought, yeah, I could get my mind around this because it was very active. You can see it right in front of you, the struggle. Tuareg Salah, Sim's co-guiding teacher, recently reminded us too, though, that these pictures are moments in time. They're snapshots of our lives on a spectrum from suffering to awakening. And it's so important to see the moments of struggle so we can constantly wake up to when we're struggling. And so here we start to see the second noble truth. In the words of Sylvia Boorstein, the cause of suffering is the mind's struggle in response to challenge. We're just beginning to see our thinking, and we strive on because of the third noble truth, the end of suffering. A non-struggle, peaceful mind is possible. And we intuit this. We felt that in picture three, and we have felt it and known it in our own hearts and minds, heart, mind, citta. Picture four, I think, shows how we live in the in-between space of the mind struggle in response to challenge and the peace possible when the mind gets out of the way. So earlier this month, Suze pointed to the dance going on in this picture. We're stepping in a dance, she said. The mind lets go. We have a sliver of wisdom that moves up. We know we're stepping onto the path. How good it feels to arrive and settle in the moment. Then all hell breaks loose. The mind is pulled by seductions. So here in this picture, the ox herder has a thin rope and they seem to be pulling with all their might and seems very ill-equipped. The ox, again, Buddha nature, pure mind, on the other hand, stands strong, balanced, perhaps slightly irritated as that swishing tail indicates. Zen traditions see the rope as discipline. You could also say mindfulness. Tim Guile, Sim's co-guiding teacher, reminds us that it's not important that we all see the same thing. Every teacher and you as well have expressed what this means to you in your practice in different words. He said the Dharma is a multifaceted jewel, and each of us point out the different aspects of the jewel. We just need to know how we relate to the experience of what we're having. So you can take that down now. Thank you. Oh, hold on. So the words, I seize it with a terrific struggle. It's great willpower. Great will and power are inexhaustible. It charges to the high plateau far above the cloud mists, or in an impenetrable ravine it stands. So the word struggle is already in there. So we can close screen for now. So I related this picture to a training, probably because I had a horse, but that was my first instinct. And I've heard that in other teachings too. So let me go back to my screen here. So, but we have no idea what we're dealing with in this picture. Effort is needed. And though Buddha nature or divine mind is right here within us, it does not, as I put it, it does not show up at a whistle or a tug of a rope. There's a guard dog called ego protecting it. And we've been feeding it for a long time, all our lives, and perhaps it pre-existed our actual birth. We have to seek access through training. As Rob Berbia, Dharma teacher who has passed on, awakening is an accident. The path of the Dharma makes us accident prone. And Heather Martin notes the heart mind is shy. The busy executive mind is loud and demanding. Training our mind is like trying to herd puppies. But with training, it becomes a skilled border collie who, without distraction, moves sheep around rather than sheep moving the collie around. And the Buddha recognized the similarity of physical training and mind training. He called the practice a path of five strengths: conviction, persistence, mindfulness, concentration, and discernment. And Tanisaro Biko summarized this in his writing, Strength Training for the Mind. There are 12 parts that work to crush and pierce the, quote, mass of ignorance that envelops the untrained mind. That's the phrase, mind crushes mind. Related to a few, and I just want to share those today. First, we start where we are. We don't have to be good. We just got to start sitting. And we have to try to pretend we're not something, that we're something we're not. Tanisaro says, so even though you feel scrappy when everyone else around you seems big, remember, you're not here to compete with them or be perfect meditators. Work for yourself. Establish that as your focus and keep strong. But my ego says I need to be good. I sit up front. I don't want anyone to see me as unformed, an unformed lump of clay. I want them to see me as fully formed, a fully formed masterpiece. I want to skip the work. I'm abhorred by my mind's wildness. I go through entire sits lost in thought, thinking about the thoughts I'm having. I assume others in the room have reached nirvana. And I remember I kept my eyes closed once when after the bell rang, trying to get that one moment, that one moment, and it didn't work. And I remember I was sitting up front. I remember Rodney, Sims Guiding founder, he laughed, and I knew he must have seen right through me. I was too self-conscious to acknowledge what I was doing. I was faking it. I was faking it till I make it. That's my humanity. But there is a conviction there. Okay, one day, sitting in my bed in Thailand when I was serving in the Peace Corps, I could not meditate. My mind was so anxious and stressed. I wrote Rodney. I told him, I can't meditate. It's impossible for my mind to relax. He said, don't meditate then. He said, sitting is just a form. He reminded me that meditation is not something to force. It's practical. Daily life is meditation too. And this was my first clue to put down what I should be doing and be true to what was actually going on in my life. If what we are doing is not true, the ox makes a beeline for the mountains. So here, a new wisdom or discernment is growing. And so I the, this talk felt to me a little bit like an undulating wave when I read it the first time. Sometimes we're at the bottom of the trough where you can't see anything but that wall of wave. It's agitated, maybe fearful and contracted, holding the breath in. Then it's just as quick, we see the whole ocean, the horizon, spaciousness, sky. Deep breath out. A clear state that knows freedom right here and now, that we don't know why or how. Second, pace yourself. That was all the first one. Second, pace yourself. Learn how to read your pain in body and mind. Tanisaro says, some pains are lying and some are telling the truth. How do we know the difference? Being present through the ups and downs can help us know if it's okay to push the body or mind and when to back off. So I like to lift weights like I was 35. Have you ever put on the weights that you used to do? And then after being humbled, you really have to start slowly all over again. With a weight that I can manage. Likewise, I just want to sit on the cushion like the big girls do and not move for 40 minutes. But I can't. Or I just grin and before long drift to some mind movie. Meanwhile, the ox has long left for the impenetrable ravine. So, taking the ups and downs of life in stride. This is really ongoing, right? But it's so glaring in the beginning. And when we first start to sit, our minds are so loud and persuasive, pervasive. All our so-called defects are magnified. All the things we hate about ourselves, we see and we keep doing. Where's the breath? Where's the body? There are so many distractions, but that is, it's natural. It's natural. It's not personal. Yesterday, I was referring to our minds have been stuck in the mud a long time, but this is the very place from which the lotus blooms. We have to keep going back to the mud of our reactivity, beliefs, opinions, desires, to see for ourselves what's true and what's just a recorded message pretending to be you that says no, flee, run to the plateau. We have to start questioning that no and say yes. There are days when I don't want to go to the why or sit. I do it anyway. I know there's a shift that happens into spaciousness, and I always feel better afterwards. So in time, the Buddha's instructions sink in. Thoughts are thoughts. Sensations are just sensations. Feelings are feelings. It can still be painful. They are. They arise and they pass away. And are. So Tanisaro was saying either way, we learn a valuable lesson, how to keep our inner observer separate from whatever else is going on. But easier said than done. Because here in this picture, we perceive and still think we are outside looking in. There's two subjects. But this is normal and natural. Again, this is a process. So this is the one I really like. The fifth one, watch our eating habits. Mind crushes mind by feeding it the right nutrition. Like our bodies need good nutrition, strong and healthy. The mind needs nourishing food to awaken itself. Mental food is intentions and that motivate attention and effort. The ox has no need for meals made of attachments, cravings, and desires. As one person put it, if it smells the slightest whiff of them, it will charge to high plateaus far above the cloud mists. I had a horse that, upon seeing me approach with the halter, would run away from me when I tried to catch her. But when I gave her grain, she came right away. My mind is like that too. I don't want what I perceive to be challenging. I want the easy way out. I leave when the going gets tough, emotionally and intellectually. Tan Nisabo, a local Seattle, maybe not directly from Seattle, but a monk, says, we are shifting nutriments to work on the path. We have to cut ourselves off from all the junk food, greed, hatred, and delusion the mind has been using for attention. And Ajahn Lee, Tanasaro's teacher, says, to feed your mind healthy mental food, look at the bad side of things you're infatuated with. And look at the good side of things you hate. So this I relate to as mindfulness. It takes mindfulness to change our eating habits. So interestingly, sixth, well, maybe not so surprising to you all, but don't leave your strength in the gym. Make the world your meditation seat. So the more we remain mindful in challenging situations, the more we'll have access to do no harm. And as we know, that benefits ourselves and others. So here's a sweet story. One summer day, I was home from college. I discovered a dog had been dumped on our property. I called and called it, but it would not come. It was hiding in a corner of our garage and would not respond to human contact, not surprisingly. I spent the entire day just sitting nearby until the moment when it just came to me. So in time, the ox will come to us. Our heart will open when we see clearly with care. Persistence through the struggle is possible. So moving into the close here, to me, this is about trusting our own individual experience as we learn to see the operating system, that machinery that we call a self. We begin to see the self as a process rather than something that's fixed and solid. We begin to see through fear as a survival instinct. We can say yes to its no. We say yes to help the ego let go. And this, a gathering of our attention, or is concentration at work, that effort to see through to the operating system of the mind. And when we do, the emerging soft voice of the heart begins to be heard over the loud, bossy voice of ego. And interestingly, I was looking at ego, and it is binary. It sees things in two categories. Yes, no, wrong, right, ugly, beautiful. But interestingly, we also, I do anyway, have this kind of negative inclination toward the word individual, because we talk about community and sangha. But I found, by listening to or reading another writing about this, that individual, you probably already know this, but individual means indivisible, that which cannot be separated or divided into parts. And that's why I was liking it to following our own voice here. So just as the body's own neurons cannot be divided into two, there is an inherent pull toward the heart mind to know itself as one in the same. We don't know it or feel it yet in picture four. We're still two, a subject and an object in struggle. But this is a gradual process. And as Tim Guile mentioned recently, there's a Zen philosophy of one continuous mistake, that it's the very nature of life to force us to fail, and that we learn more from our failures than our successes. We ignore successes, just like we kind of ignore when things are neutral. So there's a benefit to struggle and failure. And we allow things to take their own course with wise effort, just like the little dog. We need faith and courage. When we do, there's an inherent pull toward awakening in each moment along the path. I heard Tweri reference often referred to as a God consciousness that has a force for the good. Though the last words of the Buddha to his monks before he died were said to have been, strive on with diligence. He didn't say get there or any a number of things. I think that relates to this picture too. And in closing, I came across this beautiful poem called Beginners by Denise Levertov. I'll read that. But we have only begun to love the earth. We have only begun to imagine the fullness of life. How could we tire of hope? So much is a little bud. How can desire fail? We have only begun to imagine justice and mercy, only begun to envision how it might be to live as siblings with beast and flower, not as oppressors. Surely our river cannot already be hastening into the sea of non-being. Surely it cannot drag in the silt all that is innocent. Not yet. Not yet. There is too much broken that must be mended. Too much hurt we have done to each other that cannot yet be forgiven. We have only begun to know the power that is in us if we would join our solitudes in the communion of struggle. So much is unfolding that must complete its gesture. So much is in bud. Thank you, everyone, for listening. I should have asked you to close your eyes so you didn't see my feet in the picture and have that carry you around. So I was thinking of reflections today. In our breakout session. And it's the time where we are going to move into small group reflections. It's just an opportunity to share with one another what's up for you or listen to one another. It's such a gift to give others just to listen. You don't have to share. But it'd be great if you stayed. But for those who have to leave, we wish you a wonderful day and thank you for coming to Sims Sunday Sit. Here's how I'm thinking about it. So, one is, how do you let the ox come to you? How do you invite that presence where the ox isn't running away? And another way to look at it is, how do you train your mind, your heart, your body? I think I wrote this wonky. How do you train opening to the ox? No, that was right. How do you train opening to the ox and also avoiding it? For all the reasons that I mentioned, for all the reasons that you know. I know that might sound a little wonky. You could also just reflect on how you're relating to the idea of strength training, some of the concepts that were talked about Okay, if you're ready, Suze, you can take them away and then I will send them, or you can send them that message. Oh, this is it, I think, or maybe two more. We would love to hear people share generally what came up in your group, how you were identifying with struggle or ox and the rope, just anything. I know you've heard this. This is the third talk just in Sunday, and I know many of you go to Monday nights. And so what interested you this time? What tickled you this time? What question and comment you had?
If you want to go to the reactions,
yes,
button on the bottom of your screen,
you did?
And to the right, and then you can raise your yeah. hand and I'll help identify people for Susan.
Okay, I didn't do that, but she saw me anyway.
Yeah. That's okay, Judith.
Well, what I find interesting about this picture is that when I first saw it, I thought, okay, the struggle is with the ego mind, right? But the concept of the struggle being with the liberated mind, and that's mm-hmm. what I'm trying to pull in is, you know, it was like a shift. A shift in how I think about it. And so I think I'm still trying to get used to that or understand that. But I do see it. I do see it. Because that's what we want. That's what we want.
Yes. Does it help to, does it, when we talk about ego versus heart in a way, you know, when we talk about that we know there's a strategic thinker, thinking mind, and we know there's something else.
Right.
Sorry, my internet is unstable.
That's okay.
So we can also use those words. We can say when that egoic strategic thinking mind settles, what is underneath that?
Right. Yeah. I get it. It's just that I think of the struggle as being with that egoic mind and trying to force it to settle, right? Which doesn't work anyway, but rather than the struggle being with the heart or with the liberated mind.
The struggle is with the ego. It's not with the liberated mind, though I said, you know, it won't come at a dog whistle.
Right. No. But the ox representing the liberated mind and what we're, you know, the place we're trying to get to, which is really there already. And yet we're struggling with the ox in this picture. So.
Yeah, I know, because this is a stage of not knowing what you don't know.
Right.
There we see two objects.
Yeah,
you see the outside of ourselves, a blank, a power. Some people say God consciousness, awakening outside of ourselves, or this love outside of ourselves, not within. Anyway, but I sit in that. Good. Good. See Judith's struggle. Yes. No.
Yeah, I just find it very interesting.
Yes.
To kind of switch my mind a little bit there.
I kind of did that on purpose and went back and forth a little bit. Anyone else?
Did I? Discombobulate everyone. Discombobulate.
I just wanted to comment on what you and Judith were just talking about.
Mm.
We somehow think, well, when we're in a struggle, I got to, you know, resolve this struggle. I got to get it over with. And I think that maybe we're looking at that, like this struggle And I have a little bit of a trouble with the word struggle, but this process, we're in it. And trying to like have it be over before it's over, somehow stepping away from it, I think it's part of the whole process. I think those moments of, you know, what the hell? What's going on? Where am I? You know, what's the ego doing? Anyway, I think there's an invitation to kind of accept that there is struggle and that's an okay thing. I wasn't part of any of the groups. I should have joined. But anyway, that was my response to what you two were just talking about. I'd love to hear what you think.
Yeah, no, there is the normality. I mean, when you think about it, and Tim pointed to this through that Zen teaching of life is one continuous failure. That's fascinating. It's a koan, so don't think you have to answer that. But when you think about it, and that does set up a bit of a struggle in your mind to think that, you know, oh, I'm trying to achieve something. But it is natural to reach, natural to grasp. But there is no end. This mastery, this is a mastery stage of just even looking at the mind. And, you know, honestly, I'll do this my whole life. It's deeper, you know, the more I look and closer too at the same time. Again, it's reminding me too that the struggle, the effort maybe is a better word, and then we can put it in the frame of wise effort or, you know, unwise effort. Effort is an important part, right? It's what we were talking about yesterday too. Is part of the paramis. And Sheila has her hand up. Where are you? There you are.
Here. I think for me, what is coming out more and more through this Oxherding is, I don't know even that I have the words to describe it. It's sort of like it's softening, it's accepting. It's like, you know, an example I had was with a bird's nest that in my yard last year, and it was in my raspberry patch, and every time I'd go to the raspberry patch, the birds would get really angry and start twittering, you know, and I would sort of back off. And it was very hard to pick any raspberries, but I wanted to respect their nest. It was right in the raspberry patch, right? So one day I decided I would try and experiment, and I was out in the yard, and they were crying and get really angry at me for being around and defending, you know, their nest and the eggs. And I sat down in the grass, and I just started, I was pretending to weed, you know, whatever else. And I was maybe about 6 feet away. And it was interesting, in 5 minutes, those birds came down beside me and started, you know, in the grass, you know, looking for food in the grass right beside me. Mm-hmm. And even telling this, my heart, I still get goosebumps. Mm-hmm. And it's about, I think, Susan, you brought up the trust thing today. And it's sort of, to me, it is a metaphor of trust within me, who is so self-judging, self-denigrating, feeling like I'm not good enough, you know, and really being critical of myself and of my practice. And just even today in the sit, you know, whenever you brought us back to the breath, I was off the breath. My mind was off somewhere, and I thought, oh, you know, I'm usually so critical anytime I even go off the breath. So just bringing it back to that real heart place of, how is this ox going to come to me unless I can really, really accept what is within me. You know, all those things that I deem as not good enough and negative and want to be better and I'm not getting there and that sort of thing. So I think I'm going to use that metaphor of the birds in the nest and trust and remember that. And I think that was the most powerful thing for me today. So thank you.
Thank you, Sheila. Oh, gosh, we don't have that much time. I'd love to respond, but I don't think we can.
Is it okay to just move into the closing?
Yes. Oh, boy.
I think Sheila
gave us everybody. Our closing.
Hmm? Sheila gave us our closing around the conversation. It was just beautiful. And thank you. Thanks, everybody. What a lovely day and a lovely morning, rather. I just want to say a couple words about Donna. You know, it can be really challenging. Here we are on Zoom, and there's no little Donna baskets that are calling your name. And so imagine the Donna baskets that are calling you to support both Sims and the teachers. And we so appreciate all of the generosity that comes not only in money, but in volunteering and be part of our Sangha. So in closing, just kind of returning back to our settled place of presence, we know that we don't practice for ourselves alone. Our community statement reminds us that we practice to reduce ignorance, hatred, and suffering in the world. We're so grateful for these three jewels of the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Sangha. And we dedicate the merit of our practice for the well-being and peace of all beings. May all beings be free of suffering. May all beings live in peace. Thank you again, everyone, for joining us. Have a lovely rest of your day. Hope to see you all again really soon.